Mitchell and Langer on the line of scrimmage coming from either side to try to block the kick. Auburn trying to go after it. Here's a snap. They got it. Block kick. Ball's back to the 25. Picked up on the bounce at the 25-yard line. And in for a touchdown is David Langer. Mitchell on the left, and Auburn is again going after the kick, as you might imagine. Greg Gantt standing on his own 30. Auburn will try to block it. Auburn going after it. Here's a good snap. It is blocked. It is blocked.
First things first, fourth and goal at a half a yard. Jackson, touchdown!
Carnell Williams at the tailback. They'll hand it off to Williams up the middle. 25, cuts it inside. 30, 35, 40. There goes Cadillac. To the 50, to the 40, to the 30, to the 20, to the 15, 10. Go crazy, Cadillac! Go crazy! Touchdown!
Welcome to Tiger Talk Overtime, presented by Will 2, quality and safe work for industry. Your chance to talk anything and everything Auburn. Join the conversation at 343-0106. Now, here's your host, Doug Holton.
Welcome in, everybody, to Tiger Talk Overtime on this Thursday night. Glad you're with us as we talk about the Auburn Tigers football and basketball tonight. Of course, the Auburn Tigers football team in an off week as they prepare for the stretch run last Saturday. An interesting, tight ball game against the Ole Miss Rebels, who haven't been that successful this season. Only wins over Arkansas and Vanderbilt and Southeast Louisiana. The Tigers narrowly escaping that one in the last few minutes. We'll be talking more about that in the next couple of segments. And we'll also flash back a bit later in the show to our interview this fall with assistant coach Joe Witt, who was at Auburn and is still at Auburn for 25 years plus. And if you missed that interview, it's a great talk with Coach Witt, and we'll be playing that for you in just a couple of minutes. Right now, we want to talk some Auburn basketball as the Tigers are set to come to Mobile next Tuesday night, November the 12th, to take on the South Alabama Jaguars. Joining us now on the show, the former head coach of the Auburn University basketball team, Sonny Smith, now the color commentator for the Tigers. And Coach, great to have you with us tonight to talk a little Auburn basketball.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We're off to a good start. Won the exhibition game handily, so it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, and Auburn is getting ready to take an exciting road trip. I think I heard Coach Pearl talk about it a little bit, up to Annapolis to play Davidson.
Yeah, Davidson's a solid basketball team there. Yeah. They're picked second or third in their league, and I'm not sure exactly which one, but I know that they have three or four starters returning, and I think they were a solid basketball team a year ago, so that's going to be a real test for us. And also, they are a very well coached basketball team. Every year they upset somebody, or they get a big win in the league they're in, and that's a very solid league. You know, they used to be like the Southern Conference. Now they've moved up in something that's a lot bigger, and so they got better players coming in all the time. And so I think that'll be a solid test for us.
Yeah, and I know the players are going to have an opportunity to do some things up there that'll be fun, and they'll probably remember for the rest of their lives just seeing the atmosphere up there.
Sure. Well, Bruce Pearl takes advantage of everything he can on trips. Anything that might be educational, historical, fun, he always works out a way for his team either to walk through, walk by, or be a part of. And he's one of the best at that type of thing. Personal appearances, they do it all the time at the school, out to all the different schools, all the different businesses that are having something on. It's amazing what things he gets done other than practice. And he's a great practice coach.
Coach, we lost a lot of scoring from last year with Jared Bryce and Chuma Okeke going to the pros. I think the Tigers were picked fourth in the preseason. What kind of year do you see this as? A rebuilding year, or can the Tigers challenge again?
It's going to be difficult to challenge for the top spot, but I think they'll be among the top four, maybe top four. You could say top five, but maybe the top four. And I say that because they got they got some veterans returning that can do a lot of things. Juwan McCormick right now is playing as good as I've ever seen him play, and he'll probably be the point guard. Samir Dowdy is a guy that can play two or three positions and has played them, and they expect him to have a very good year. Austin Wiley is healthy for the first time in a long time, and I think he'll do a really fine job at the post. And Anthony Hardaway, Anthony Hardaway is coaching Memphis.
McLemore.
He is much better now than he was as a shooter. McLemore is, now that I got that right. He is really hands down a much better outside shooter than he was a year ago. And he was at times last year in making shots that were at a big time in the shot clock.
Mm-hmm.
He was very good at that, and I think he'll be better than that this year.
Yeah, I noticed, I think, in the exhibition game against Eckerd that Coach Pearl started not Okiki but Okoro, the young guy, Isaac Okoro, and interesting lineup there. What do you see in Okoro, and how can he fit in this puzzle this year, do you think?
Well, McLemore's not coming off because of talent. He's coming off because he can play two positions.
Uh-huh.
He can play the position that Austin Wiley plays, and he can go out and play where O'Kara plays too at the same time. And he's he is more capable of facing the basket. Plus, Bruce wanted to get some firepower off the bench because he didn't know how these young people were going to fit in. He just knew that Isaac was such a really fine player that he was going to be a starter regardless. And Anthony was probably the most capable from a mental standpoint to come off the bench because he's going to play more minutes than he did a year ago. It doesn't matter where he starts or not.
Right. And I noticed a couple other guys, Akinbola and also Devin Cambridge.
Akinbola.
Yeah, who Coach Pearl talked about the other day.
He's 6'8 to 6'10. But there's a factor there that's difficult to gauge. He has the longest reach of anybody on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't played basketball all that long. And he's tremendous at blocking shots. And he is from an effort standpoint, he probably hustles more than anybody on the court. And he runs extremely hard. I think they're going to have to teach him a way that he can get 5 or 6 points a game for them because he's not a shooter. But if he develops into what we think he can as a shot blocker and a runner of the floor, I think he's going to be a big help.
Mm-hmm.
Akinbola just hadn't played enough basketball yet to be the kind of player that I think he's going to be.
Yeah, a couple of guys that Coach Pearl talked about, Devin Cambridge, I saw one of his dunks the other night, and also he keeps talking about D'Angelo Purifoy and maybe that he's going to have that breakout season.
Out on the thing, he's probably going to be the number one guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be the guy that can get you double figures every night. He's a guy that can shoot the ball facing up and also has a fair post-up game. And so he's starting, but I think you'll see him more on the outside than you will on the inside, even though he's starting at the four. And they're doing that so they can get into that three-guard setup type of thing. And I think they'll do that quite a bit. And I think that if D'Angelo plays the way that D'Angelo played, let's say in the Boston College game 2 years ago in Madison Square Garden, if he gives any kind of performances like that, Auburn will be a team that it's going to be hard to beat them at home, and they'll have a good chance on the road. So there's a lot of ifs in this thing, but there's not there's not as many ifs as they are positives. I will say that.
Yeah, I really was impressed with Javon and Samir, the backcourt. Coach, we're looking forward to the Tigers coming down to Mobile November the 12th to take on South Alabama, and hopefully we'll see you then, and enjoy the ball
game. That's going to be a big test for the Tigers, I believe. If they got a good bunch returning, and I don't know who they do, but I know how hard they're going to play in that game. So it's going to be a difficult game, but I'm looking forward to coming to Mobile anytime.
The voice of Coach Sonny Smith. When we come back, we will flash back to our interview with longtime Auburn football assistant Joe Witt. That's coming next right here on Tiger Talk Overtime. Stay with us.
Tiger Talk OT continues. Presented by Will 2, quality and safe work for industry. Share your thoughts at 343-0106. Now your host, Doug Holton.
And welcome back in, everyone, to Tiger Talk Overtime. We're happy to welcome to the show the legendary assistant coach for the Auburn Tigers, Coach Joe Witt, who spent some time in Mobile, of course, grew up in Pritchard. And, Coach, great to have you with us. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing great. It's great to be on your show.
Well, good. We're glad you're here. Tell me about, I know you said when we talked the other day, you're still doing some work for Auburn, a little consulting, and you're going to Birmingham tonight. Tell us a little bit about what you do for Auburn now.
What I'm doing now is just fundraising and athletic fundraising, and doing a little bit of speaking. Go to quite a few Auburn clubs tonight. I'm going to the Greater Birmingham Auburn Club. They are honoring some Auburn alums, and we're going to be a part of it.
Sounds good. I know you're also, I think I read you're on the board of trustees at Alabama State,
I'm on the board of trustees of Alabama State University, my alma mater.
I know that's a great honor for you.
Well, it is a great honor. It's a great honor and great opportunity to try to give back.
Right. I wanted to ask you about your award that you got not too long ago last year. I think the American Football Coaches Association honored you with the Lifetime Achievement Award. I know that was a great honor for you.
That was a great honor. That was really a great honor and a surprise. I didn't know it was coming, and it's just really, really humbling to think that so many of my peers would vote that I get that such an award.
Mm-hmm. I think your son gave that one to you, right?
He presented it to me, yes.
Yeah.
He sure did.
And that was fun.
And that was really, he did such a great job, it got me all choked up. I couldn't hardly accept it. I couldn't do much of an acceptance because sometimes those moments hit you, you know.
That's so right.
That was one of them.
Yeah.
Certain thrill.
How is he doing? I know he's switched this year to a new team, and everything going well in Cleveland?
Yeah, well as you can go when you're 2-3.
Yeah.
They're working hard trying to get the culture change and get the winning attitude and all about the Cleveland Browns. I think they got have an opportunity to get that done, but it's not going to be an overnight thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to take some really detailed work.
Did he have a relationship with Freddie Kitchens before he took the job, or how did that work out?
I don't know to what extent, but I think they knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent their relationship, I don't know.
Take me back a little bit, Coach, to your years in Mobile and Pritchard, growing up, Blount High School in the late 60s. What do you remember about that in high school and your younger days? Does anything stick out to you?
Well, the number one thing that would stick out to me today is that, you know, I came along before integration.
Yeah.
The opportunities to go anywhere you wanted to go in college or even in town, for that matter, was not there. So it's such a different time, and it's a different Mobile, it's a different Pritchard, but having said all of that, I wouldn't change the way I was raised at all. And the friends I made and my friends that I went to high school with and the people that grew up with in my community would not change one thing about it.
Mm-hmm. How many of those friends do you still keep up with that you went to high school with?
I'd be simple. I'd be very simple. As many as I can, as many as we can get our hands on, we run into each other from time to time. I talked with a couple guys just today to my classmates. That grew up and some of that in the audience with no Lionel Woodyard and Archie Hale. Those two guys, they were classmates. We graduated in 68 from high school. So, and then there are several classmates that are still in town. James P. Ryan coached at Viger High School, still in town, and Deborah Hudson, one of the young ladies. So a lot of my friends, we are pretty close class.
I didn't realize you and Coach Pirine played together, huh?
Yeah, sure did.
Gotcha. Anything stick out football wise from those days, or how was the Blount High School team?
Well, you know, I would say pretty good. We ran a single wing on offense, and that's something that was, I guess, it was different from what a lot of people were doing, and now some versions of it have come back. So that was probably the most unique thing that we've done from a football standpoint, the single wing.
Mm-hmm.
Weason had ran it before us, and then our coach, brother-in-law, Levi Washington, started it, and then Coach Terry implemented it.
Gotcha. And then on to Alabama State after your career at Blount High School, and as you mentioned, the atmosphere was a little bit different then in college athletics. Integration was just starting. Did you have any other opportunities, or was Alabama State the one that stuck out to you?
Well, yeah, you know, the thing is, you basically went back then where your friends, most of your friends were, and a lot of my friends went to Alabama State, and of course we thought about going to junior college at Eastern Arizona and community college, but some of my closer friends went to ASU, and so that's why I end up, and I'm so glad I did, because I met my wife. Been together 45 years, and Coach, after meeting her, we dated for 3 and been married 45, so that was home run.
That was a good connection.
Yes.
And then I read about your coaches at Alabama State. I know they made a great impact on you also.
Well, yeah, Coach Henry Hobart was my head football coach and certainly had a great impact on me. And then my position coach was George James, who became the head coach later on. But those two men, they were real hard-nosed football coaches, and they made you understand that you had to give the best you had, and they would not accept anything less than the best you had. And I appreciate that. I think that sort of gave me a kickstart through the rest of my life and my career.
Yeah, you went on to coach at Robert E. Lee in Montgomery after you got out of Alabama State. I think you coached football and wrestling there. Is that right?
Yes, football and wrestling. And coach had a really nice career at Lee High School. It was a great learning stage at the time. Lee was one of the largest schools in the state of Alabama. And I coached football, coached linebackers, and coached secondary first and linebackers. And I was the head wrestling coach. We were fortunate enough to win a couple state championships and lots of good mates. And we still stay in touch with those youngsters that we coach. They're men. In fact, I talked with one of them today, Tommy Mills. Most of them are turning 58. I told them they're getting old.
Yeah, yeah. Is that something you did in high school wrestling, or did you just kind of fall into that?
I just fell into it. We played around in college with it. We had a bunch of guys that played at Alabama State that was from up north and had wrestled and just more or less played around with it and fell into it with the opportunity to coach it at R.E. Lee.
Mm-hmm. And then about 1980, 1981, you get the opportunity at Auburn. Coach Dye comes to talk to you, I guess. And was that a hard decision to make that leap? Because
no,
yeah,
not at all. It was a great opportunity. Probably, I would say, probably one of the better things that happened to me in my life, had the opportunity to go to Auburn and work for Coach Dye for 12 years and to grow up. You know, I had coached, but Coach Dye, I would say, was very patient and gave me a great opportunity to learn the game and to grow. And I'll never, you know, forget him for giving me that opportunity. because the opportunity he gave me at Auburn, even though I've stayed at Auburn all these years, I've had 16 or more offers to go other places, but I chose to stay at Auburn because it's such a great place.
Legendary assistant coach for the Auburn Tigers, Coach Joe Witt, who spent some time in Mobile, of course, grew up in...
Tiger Talk OT continues, presented by Will 2, quality and safe work for industry. Share your thoughts at 343-0106. Now your host, Doug Holton.
And welcome back in, everyone, to Tiger Talk Overtime. We're happy to welcome to the show the legendary assistant coach for the Auburn Tigers, Coach Joe Witt. 25 years as assistant coach at Auburn. You did a lot of things on the Plains, won a lot of SEC championships, and influenced a lot of great players. I was reading about Craig Ogletree the other day. I think he's one of the guys that you coached and had a big impact on.
Well, Craig Ogletree is one of those great guys. Absolutely. He is a minister now. I went over to his church last year for his anniversary. I think it's his 7th year anniversary, and they gave him such a nice time. But, you know, was an All-American. Just a great, great guy. Great kid. Now he's a man. But so many guys. Craig is just one of them. You know, Carlos Dansby and Kevin Green and Gerald Robinson. You know, the list go on and on. 25 years to coach a lot of guys.
Yeah, and those guys coming back to see you and calling you on the phone and keeping in touch, that's kind of what it's all about, right?
It is. You know, I will say this. I am very honored that the guys that I coached and worked with all the way back to high school still stay in touch with me on a regular basis. You know, and that means a lot to hear from them and for them to call and check on me and look for me when they come around. So that's one of the great things to still be at Auburn, because when they do come back, they know one guy that's still there they can look for and talk about the past of Auburn, history of Auburn.
Yeah, exactly. And they know where to find you. You're still in Auburn. So
I'm still in Auburn, still have office there.
Yeah. I think of guys like Greg Carr and Quentin Riggins. I guess you had a role in recruiting him, right?
If they come by, Rick Quinn is on the board at Auburn.
Right.
Yeah, and Coach Greg is an orthopedic surgeon in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a little, you've got a place out there, out from Auburn a little bit, where you can kind of entertain those guys now and show them around, right?
Well, yes, I absolutely do. I have a little place. We enjoy it. And always welcome friends and family to come by and visit.
Tell me about Coach. I was reading about all the things you accomplished at Auburn, but one of the things that didn't fall into place, or however you want to phrase it, was the national championship. I was reading about the 83 season, and I don't know if a lot of people remember or not, but when you guys came to Auburn, my first year was 1980, and we were 0-6 in the conference, and then the next year 2-4. And the next year, 4-2, and 1983, 6-0, and SEC champions. So that was a great accomplishment. But I always remember going to the Sugar Bowl, beating Michigan, and walking around in New Orleans talking to my friends saying, we did it. We won the national championship. But then we woke up the next day, and Miami had jumped us.
Well, you know, they did, but they jumped us in the polls, but they didn't jump us in spirit.
Right.
And the computer analysis made us national champions.
Yeah.
And we actually had a reunion, an A3 reunion, this year out at Coach Dyer's, and the guys got together, and we decided, the players, that we were champions, and they because the computer poll, and we accept that championship, so that they did by rings.
Yeah,
83 national champion. And so, and I told one of our former players just today, I said, you know, you really, it is fitting because you absolutely won the championship. How can a, you know, the way it went down, the only team we lost to was Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And Georgia played Texas and beat Texas, and we played Michigan, beat Michigan, which is all we could do. We lost to Texas our very first game, then lose another game for the rest of the year, including the bowl game. Miami beat Nebraska, which we thought was certainly going to help us,
mm-hmm.
and they jumped from fifth to first. That wouldn't happen today. Wouldn't even have a chance.
Yeah, that's right. And probably another team in the 80s could have done it, and Coach Tuberville's team could have done it if they would have had a chance to do it. I guess it was fun to finally watch Auburn accomplish that in 2010 when Cam was there.
Absolutely. The 04 team certainly could have, without question.
Mm-hmm. I
thought it was the best team that I'd coached on.
Yeah. I think of I can't remember what year was the 7-6 game against LSU. That team was pretty good, too.
That was 88.
Yeah.
That was 87-88, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a team that really was a very, very – that was the best defensive football team I coached on, perhaps. They could have easily won the championship.
Right.
And
a couple of the guys on this defensive line kind of remind me of that one.
Yeah, there are a couple of guys on this defensive line, Marlon Davis and – Brown, those guys, they can absolutely play. They may be better than, I tell you, those guys can run and play. And Nick Cole and Truesdale, they make up a really, really good front.
Mm-hmm. I know when I was visiting with Coach Dye, I was going to mention it's been a few years ago, but you know, I mentioned to him that whatever success Auburn was having now, we were standing on his shoulders, and I feel the same way about you being an assistant coach there with him at the same time. But those were some great years. Those are interesting comparisons to maybe compare those defenses to the ones we have now.
Well, the difference now is this coach is the spread offense, so they play a little different, but this defensive front is certainly comparable to any. This may be the best one. It's comparable to any that's been there. And I'm mighty proud of our history at Auburn. Mighty proud of what Coach Dye was able to do. The one thing I know, without any reservation, Coach Dye changed the culture of Auburn, how we feel, how the Auburn people feel about Auburn. We believe that we can beat anybody, and we believe that we belong. That will never change.
Yeah, that'll live for a long time. Well, Coach, I know you got to get going and get to Birmingham tonight, but we appreciate you being with us on Tiger Talk Overtime, and anytime you're in Mobile, stop by and see us.
Thank you very much. Enjoy it, Doug. Take care now.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
You bet.
Bye. And always good to hear the voice of former Auburn assistant coach Joe Witt as he continues to work for the university, speaking at quarterback clubs and sites around the Southeast. Joe was at the Birmingham quarterback club that night, and he continues to do good work for the Auburn Tigers. Great memories of those Tiger teams that he coached with four different head coaches at Auburn University. Well, the Tigers coming off the win over Ole Miss, but it was a very close ball game last Saturday. Of course, an off week this week. What did you think about the Tigers' win over Ole Miss? There were good moments and bad moments, but when it came down to the end, a very close ball game, and the Tigers survive by 6 over the Ole Miss Rebels. And now the stretch run for Auburn as they'll face, again, Georgia, Samford, and Alabama coming down the stretch. And the big game coming up this weekend on Auburn's off week, Auburn and LSU, which will have major implications as far as who wins the SEC West and who goes to the championship game. And who knows, it could have some implications for the Auburn Tigers as well. But what does Gus Malzahn have to do in these final three games to keep things going at Auburn, to stay at Auburn? It's always an interesting conversation. It has been for the last couple of years. The Tigers will definitely be an underdog to the Georgia Bulldogs at home, and also, of course, an underdog to the Alabama Crimson Tide this year at home. So does Gus Malzahn have to win those two ball games to stay at Auburn, or will people start to talk about a buyout again and Gus Malzahn on the hot seat? Those are always great conversation pieces. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to talk to the former host of this show and a guy that is very knowledgeable about Auburn football, Bo Megginson. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about what lies ahead for the Tigers in the coming weeks and also in the postseason. We want to take just a minute tonight to thank our sponsors again here on Tiger Talk Overtime for this season. Our title sponsor, Will2, and you can see them at will2.com, W-I-L-T-E-W.com. And Wes Williams, the owner there, an Auburn guy. If you need any industrial help with your situation, call him, and you can get the all the contact information again at will2.com. Also, our sponsors, Azalea City Rehab, Robertsdale Power, Rolling Tigers Booster Club, of course, the Bash. Coming up on the 13th of November, Dr. Mike Rim heading things up there, and you can contact him at the office and get tickets if you'd like. Also, your CBD store of West Mobile, Bailey's Television, T. Bachelor & Sons, D&K Suit Discounters, Edward Jones, and the Carrot Patch. All right, so we're going to talk some more Auburn football in just a minute. Thanks to all our sponsors, and we're going to talk about the off week and about what lies ahead. Georgia, Samford, and Alabama coming up. Stay with us. Bo Megginson next on Tiger Talk Overtime.
Talk OT continues, presented by Will2, quality and safe work for industry. Share your thoughts at 343-0106. Now your host, Doug Holton.
And welcome back into the show, everybody. Tiger Talk Overtime on this Thursday night as the Auburn Tigers are in an off week this week, but heading to an exciting finish. The three games remaining, Georgia, Samford, and, of course, Alabama, the last ball game of the year. Joining us now on the show, the man who used to host the show, and as I always intro him, one of the most knowledgeable people about Auburn football that I know, Bo Megginson from Miami, I think. Bo, how are you today?
Doing very well, Doug. How are you this evening?
Doing good. Interesting ball game, the last one that we saw against the Ole Miss Rebels. We talked a little bit before the game, and it didn't turn out too much different than we talked about. A pretty close ball game for Auburn. What did you make out of that one?
Well, you know, Doug, it's the product is what we've come to expect and what Gus Malzahn produces against, you know, the lower half of the conference. He puts up big numbers. Of course, we didn't get big scores, but he puts up big statistics. And, again, consequently fails miserably against the upper half, which is what we've seen against LSU and against Florida. And once again, the offense struggled in the red zone. And between the 20s, Bo Nix did okay. We ran the ball a little better. Defense played, once again, very, very well, which has been the theme. But from a long-term perspective, when you look next year, and even the rest of this year, against Georgia, Alabama, hopefully we can win. I'm not sure. If you look at what Gus Malzahn does, not just this year, not just last year, but really since 2014, against upper half teams, LSU, Georgia, Alabama for the most part, and then, you know, Florida this year, or you can go back to Texas A&M and they had a few good years. When we play equal or comparable talent, his offense fails. Doesn't just struggle, it fails. And hopefully he can have a deathbed conversion like he had in 2017, and we can have a good outing against Georgia and Alabama. But history indicates that's a very, very long shot. And I think Gus Malzahn's defenses have figured him out. He's not a very good offensive coordinator statistically, and becoming worse as a head coach. I think the comparable analogy is where Terry Bowden was in 1997 with Damian Craig.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at our roster, that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, not a great record against Alabama, Georgia, and LSU for sure.
6-15, I believe,
yeah,
is his record.
Yeah, interesting
and
thing.
And has yet to win on the road on any of those places.
Yeah. The interesting
in
thing.
In fact, we'll go a step further. One other statistic most people don't know: Gus Malzahn, as a head coach, has not scored a touchdown in the second half in Athens, Georgia, as a head coach.
Mm. That's very interesting. But the thing, I don't want to dwell on the Ole Miss game too much, Bo. But the thing that really struck me as I was driving home is they came out in the second half with DJ Williams running the football, which I thought they should have in the first half. If ever there was a budding star in the LSU game that maybe deserved a start and maybe they should have run the football in the first quarter of the Ole Miss game, that's what I thought should have happened. What did you think?
Well, it reminded me of 2016 when Kerryon Johnson was the main running back, and then against Mississippi State, I'm not sure if people remember back this far, against Mississippi State, Kerryon got hurt in the first quarter and mm-hmm. Cameron Petway came in. Cameron Petway, to that point, had not carried the ball much at all. He was basically listed as an H-back, and all he did was subsequently rip off 1,200 yards in the remaining seven games of the year and lead the conference in yards per carry, and I think was the leading yardage rusher in the entire league in the SEC.
Right.
So the obvious question is, why wasn't this kid playing before? What did they not see in scrimmages that clearly was available to be seen and was available during games?
Mm-hmm.
So Gus's evaluation of talent, not just at quarterbacks, and his failures as a quarterback coach are painfully obvious.
Yeah.
Now you look at running backs. Cameron Petway languished on the bench forever. Now you've got DJ Williams who can help us, and hasn't really gotten a chance until now. And folks say, well, he's been injured. Well, maybe if he was injured, why was he playing on special teams earlier in the year?
Mm, that's right.
So it's just another example of roster mismanagement, talent, inability to evaluate and utilize existing talent. And finally, you saw the ball go to Anthony Schwartz, the most dangerous football player in the country. And he doesn't touch the ball he touches it one time against Florida and four times against LSU.
Hmm.
And I think two of those catches against LSU were in the fourth quarter. And so why is that? Joey Gatewood's talent could have helped us. Just I compare the use of Joey, or lack of use of Joey Gatewood, to what Hugh Nall did in 2003 when he refused to put Ronnie Brown and Carnell Williams on the field at the same time.
Yeah,
it's not that hard to do. It doesn't take a genius to figure it out. Aborges did it the next year and helped us go to an undefeated season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that difficult for someone willing to exercise the intellectual energy.
An interesting thing also to me in the Ole Miss game is I think it was in the second quarter of play. They had DJ in the game, they took DJ out, I think, on second down, put Sean Shivers in the game, and then ran the lead play right up the middle, which I thought would have been much better suited for DJ. But anyhow, so we get down to, Georgia, Samford, and Alabama the end of the year, and I guess the question is, as you mentioned before, a lot of people leaving on the defensive line. There may be some guys leaving early. The offensive line is pretty much gone after this year. So where does that leave Auburn, and what does Gus have to do the last three games to make this work?
Well, the bleeding, as we see from Joey Gatewood transferring, is going to continue if things don't get improved. You're going to see probably at least three more offensive players that are underclassmen go into the transfer portal. You're probably going to see a couple of defensive players, although Coach Steele and Rodney Garner and the staff on the defensive side of the ball have got the guys believing, and the production is there. And so hopefully some of those guys won't stick around, but we're going to lose probably two, maybe three kids to the portal because they just don't believe in Gus Malzahn anymore. Mm-hmm. And I can't say I blame them. So that sets things up really against the wall next year. Historically, quarterbacks under Gus Malzahn get worse over time. I suspect Bo Nix probably will follow the same path. I hate that because he's only a freshman. He's got a good future. And I think the real question is who leaves Auburn first, Gus Malzahn or Bo Nix, because I don't think both will be around in 4 years.
Mm. Wow. Okay, so Georgia coming to Auburn in the next ball game. The Dogs obviously will be a favorite in the ball game. Not sure how much. Probably, I would think, a touchdown or more. They pulled off the victory over Florida over the past weekend. And so I guess I'm not sure how Auburn runs or wins that football game. But how do they approach that one?
Yeah, I think back to 2017 when literally after the LSU loss, when we blew the 20-point lead in the second half, and Gus really was performing then the way he was now, the way he has been this year. And we had Georgia and Alabama at the end of the year, and Gus was literally coaching for his job. If he doesn't win those two games, he's going to get fired, yeah. Justifiably so. But
similar situation.
He was able to pull things together and have a good, obviously, final two big games of the year.
Yeah.
If he can do that, you know, that's my hope, that something mm-hmm. can happen internally for him, that he can wake up, he can have an epiphany and realize what the shortcomings are and what he's doing, and then strengthen those shortcomings, like most head coaches try to do.
All right, Bo, we're out of time.
Big Ten. Look at how he's doing now.
We're out of time. I got your point, and I hope the Tigers can get it done in the last three games. Appreciate you being with us. We'll be watching down the stretch.
Thanks so much, Doug.
All right, Bo Megginson joining us from Miami, and we'll talk more about the Auburn Tigers and the Georgia Bulldogs coming up next week right here on Tiger Talk Overtime.